real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself! Hi, everyone! Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb, and then smart again. I'm Helen Hong, and now from the Angel City Brewery in downtown Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen Hong. Thanks, everybody. My goodness, what a wonderful crowd. Helen, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, J. Keith. Thanks for asking.
Well, you're welcome. What have you been up to since our last show?
I just got back from chilly, Canada.
Oh, I thought at first you meant Chile, because I believe there's a country with that name.
No, I was referring to Chile as in frosty.
Oh, okay.
Frosty Chile, Canada. I was in Montreal, which is lovely. It's a beautiful city. What I appreciate about Montreal is it's so much like America, and yet nothing like America. People were trying to speak French to me and saying things, saying the temperature in Celsius. I was like, I don't get it. I'm American.
That's strange. I was in Africa.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, nothing interesting about that.
That's more exotic than Montreal.
It was fun. Not as cold, but yeah. I did see monkeys. I saw penguins. I swam with seals in the ocean. Anyway, it's good to be back here with all of you people in Los Angeles. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet two experts on very different topics, and finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. But let's get things started and meet the first of today's guests. Helen, who do we have?
She is in her 13th season playing Penelope Garcia on Criminal Minds on CBS. It's Kirsten Vangsnes!
Kirsten! Please have a seat right there.
Does it make me a speciesist that I didn't know that there would be penguins in Africa?
I too was a little taken aback by that.
Now, usually I do bring my own penguins, but I was very happy to find them there as well. No, there was an entire beach out in Cape Town called Boulder's Beach where the penguins live and frolic, apparently, naturally, according to nature.
I had no idea about that. I'm super excited.
Well, already people are learning something
from this
show.
I'm just excited that there's different climates that they do well in.
Yeah.
I was worried about that.
Yeah, I only thought they did well wearing little hats and waddling on an iceberg. But apparently they're
on drinking their own. Coke.
Yes.
Welcome, Kirsten.
Welcome, Kirsten.
Sorry, I said a brand.
Now, as Helen mentioned, you were in your 13th season on Criminal Minds.
Wow.
That is amazing.
It's true.
I know. That's a feat.
Is it true that you really just started with two lines on the show?
That is 1,001% true. I was a two-line co-star. And co-star in TV land is actually the smallest part you can have, right below basically an extra, which we call a background artist. So it was a two-line co-star. I was supposed to be in that one episode, and then it just got...
You just wowed them.
I'm a theater girl, so I can do a lot of information in one take, and I think I saved them money. I don't know if it was talent.
But
I'm very grateful for it. It's the best job I've ever had. And I worked at Hof's Hut, you guys.
I'm dying to see those two lines. I mean, you must have really
delivered. Do you remember
delivered,
the two lines?
No. I was so scared at the time. I was, like, shaking, and I still can't type. And I was typing so hard on the plastic
that
now
I
have a gel pad.
Analysis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't type. Oh, don't look down. Don't ever look down. When you watch the show, do not look down. This hand, because I'm left-handed, is doing a lot of fancy stuff. There's a lot of touching of the F12.
Ooh.
This hand is just for symmetry. And it does nothing.
You have a dud right hand.
I would love them just to do a print screen of what you actually type during one of the shows and just see what it is.
It's a lot of the Fs.
a lot of the function keys.
It's a lot of function keys.
Excellent. Well, speaking of functions, and this will be a segue, you function as an entrepreneur as well. Tell us about this business that you have.
I am the co-owner of the Blinking Owl Distillery in Santa Ana, California.
What?
If you're saying, oh, Kirsten, that's far away, I would say to you, from our Union Station right here, it is a 37-minute ride. It's four stops.
Applause for taking the local. Yes.
An organic. We're the first distillery in all of Orange County that's going to be actually by October. We're going to have bourbon and rye, but we make vodka, orange vodka from oranges from the Orange County Heritage Museum, aquavit gin, aged gin. It is a magical wonderland. It looks like adult Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I'm there.
And you can find us on Instagram at the Blinking Owl Distillery. If you don't believe me and think I'm lying, look at it. It's a majestic, wonderful place. And if you're not Augustus Goop, you'll do just fine. That you
That's
can.
Excellent. Well, we certainly appreciate that, and we certainly appreciate you being here. Kirsten Vankness, Yay! Everybody. Helen, whom will Kirsten be playing against?
He is an actor who you've seen on TV and on Broadway and whose improvised cabaret show, Off the Top, plays worldwide. It's Jason Kravitz!
Jason Yay! Kravitz!
Yay! I'm going down!
Yeah, well, she's going down! We're all going down! Hey, Jason!
Yeah. Welcome, Hi, Jason! Alan.
Jason, nice Hi. To see you.
Nice to see you guys.
Do you have any secret career where you can help get us drunk and help the environment
I'm
as well?
I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about starting just my own personal bourbon and bathtub gin in my actual bathtub in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm down.
Bourbon, bath, and beyond. I'll
Bourbon,
go there.
Bourbon, bath, and beyond.
Now, I mentioned, or rather, Helen mentioned, of course, that you're an actor who people have seen a lot. And I'm sure as soon as people see you, even if they don't know the name, they're like, oh, that guy.
That yeah. was my middle name is Jason That Guy Kravitz.
Yeah. You're very recognizable.
I have that kind of face. Yeah, yeah, I tend to show up in your living room when you least expect it.
Wow. That's why I double locked that
How'd
door.
How'd you get in here?
Yeah. Woo. Now, Helen mentioned that you've been on Broadway.
I've done the Broadway, yes, a few times. I originated a role in a musical called The Drowsy Chaperone, which played...
Yeah.
Yes, I
yeah.
love that show.
Yeah. Ran for a few years. I've done a couple other shows as well. I did a Woody Allen one-act play on Broadway, which was part of an evening called Relatively Speaking, and that was a lot of fun. So I've had my moments on the boards, yes, yes.
And now you are trotting the boards across the globe in an improvised cabaret show.
Yeah, it was an odd thing. I think I just wanted to do something really scary, and I thought what could be the scariest thing is get on stage by yourself and make up a bunch of songs based on audience suggestions by yourself.
That's like next-level terrifying.
It was pretty scary. So yeah. I have a band, and I call it a band completely unplanned. It's me on stage with a band and pretending to be a cabaret singer telling the life story of a person whose life has never existed.
So. And you get suggestions from the audience.
Yep.
And I actually went to the show when you were in Los Angeles a couple years ago, and you actually, by coincidence, picked the suggestion that I'd put in.
What was it? Do you remember?
Something brilliant.
It was brilliant. I remember. It was one of my favorite things. Anyway, it's terrifying.
But what was great also is that you'd really do it in very specific genres. Like, you actually did one of the suggestions I'd given in the style of a Jason Robert Brown song.
Yeah.
And, like, I've seen a lot of musical improv. I've never seen anyone be that specific about, you know, a specific style of, you know, off-Broadway kind
sure.
of musical theater.
Sure. I tried to do things that I find fun and interesting to parody. In a way, it's a big parody of a cabaret show. So I do a Jason Robert Brown, a Sondheim, kind of a Mel Torme medley with bongos, things like that.
Excellent. Fun. And you ran the show for a long run at the Edinburgh Fringe Fest.
I did it in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year. I do it monthly in New York. As a matter of fact, if you're listening now, the next show in New York is on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, at Ooh. The Duplex. And if you're listening now, then you will have gone to see the show on Sunday, the 25th of February, at Vitello's in California.
Oh.
The time-traveling plugs
amazing.
Of Mr. Jason
Isn't
Kravitz.
That amazing? Yeah.
All right. Now, we have asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside of your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. Kirsten, terrible. You told us you know a lot about Duran Duran, female sexual anatomy, and vegetarian food.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They're synonymous.
Please hold your applause till the end. Jason, you told us that you know a lot about intercontinental geography, crossword puzzles, and young Frankenstein.
Yes.
Ah. Yes.
And female sexual anatomy.
Okay, well, we'll get to that.
I learned everything I know from him.
Okay, wow.
In a class.
That'll be a very interesting quiz.
Teach a class. Come on.
Later on, we'll ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. Now, if either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to take away some of those points. Your subjects today, insinuates and primates. Up first, Kirsten and primates.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't mean to insinuate anything different.
Yes, there are penguins in Africa.
Okay. 2 points. Yes. Kirsten, there are many similarities between simians, but your question to ponder is, what is the difference between apes and monkeys? Now, I will point out, of course, there are many differences between apes and monkeys without going through their whole 23andMe chart. We are looking for two of the major differences between apes and monkeys.
I'm going to say that apes are considerably larger than monkeys, and that monkeys don't know sign language.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Have you attempted sign language with a monkey and been sorely disappointed?
So many times.
I will also point out, monkeys also do not know French.
Yeah, and they don't like scandal.
No.
So.
Or Jane Goodall. They hate Jane Goodall, too. Yeah. That's the
all right. We have Kirsten's answer. We don't know yet if she's correct. Jason, if you don't think she's got it entirely right, you can steal the points by giving us the correct answer. Do you think she got it exactly right?
I don't think she got it exactly right. I'm going to guess here.
Okay. Yeah. In that case, would you like to supply two of the differences?
I'm going to give the differences here. Sign language was a good one, though. I think I'm going to go with prehensile tail. And I'm going to go with opposable thumb.
All right, and now who has which?
I think both of them go to the, the opposable thumb is to the apes, and the prehensile tail is to the monkeys, and the other ones don't have it.
All right.
That's my guess. And sign language.
Yes. Again, only two and not one that's already been said is what we're looking for.
Wait, just to clarify, so you're saying prehensile tail... Monkeys have a prehensile tail.
Monkeys have prehensile tail. Apes do not have tails. And apes have opposable thumbs. Monkeys do not.
Got it.
All right. Well, enough monkey business. Let's end this segment and go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Okay. Here are the facts. Apes are larger than monkeys. Yes. That's 1 point already for Kirsten. And apes have larger brain capacities. And so, can do sign language.
What?
2 points for Kirsten.
Wow.
Now, I will point out...
As it is, you don't always have to be smart. Just observe
it. That's right.
I got to say, when you first came out with that, I was like, oh, no. But then I looked down and I was like, oh, my God, she's right.
She's correct.
But wait, tails and thumbs.
Yeah, tails. Well, actually, Jason happens to be correct also. Since you were not incorrect, we cannot award points to both of you.
Right.
So... Jason, I hope you will enjoy it for the love of learning.
I'm proud of myself.
Very good. So what does that mean as far as our points go, Helen?
So far, Kirsten has 2 points.
That's right. Also a fun fact, there are 5 great apes, the gorilla, the chimpanzee, the orangutan, the bonobo, and human.
Ooh.
There is only one lesser ape, the gibbon. Yeah, screw that guy.
I
think that was a gibbon that just knocked that thing over. That just proves it. He's a lesser ape. All right, we've got 2 points for Kirsten. Up next is Jason. Jason, your subject today insinuates.
Insinuates.
Your question to ponder, what is the difference between imply and infer?
Well, I'm not sure what you're getting across there, Kate. I'm not sure what you mean by that. I'm not sure. Imply and infer.
Imply and infer.
Well, the spelling, that would be one thing.
I should have clarified. What are the difference in definitions
between
imply and infer? Yes.
The difference between imply and infer, obviously, is when you infer something, you are not saying it, the actual words. When you imply something, you are actually saying it. So one is verbal, one is more hidden than the other. Boy, that was really good, huh?
That's
awesome.
Really losing that large ape
large
brain of yours.
Ape brain here, yes.
Okay, so just to clarify, so if you're... implying something,
it's spoken. It's something is spoken. If you're inferring something, it is not directly spoken. It's like two steps as opposed to one. Good so far.
All right.
Yeah, that's where I'll go with that.
Okay, we have Jason's answer. We don't know yet if he is correct. Kirsten, if you don't think he's got it exactly right, you can steal those points. Do you think Jason got it exactly right?
I feel like to infer... is like where it's not, to imply means like you're not saying it, and then someone says, wait, aren't you saying that? And to infer means like, well, duh, of course I'm saying that. It's right there. It's inferred.
Which is the exact opposite of what I said.
So I'm just saying I agree with you.
Except the opposite.
Except the opposite. All right.
Oh, yes.
We are in for a hell of a game today.
Wow.
It is time to insinuate ourselves to the answer. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Okay, here are the facts. To imply is to hint at something without directly saying it. You're providing the information. To infer is to make a guess without direct evidence. You're interpreting the information.
So what does that mean as far as our points go?
All right, I'm going to say Jason got imply right, because Jason, you did say imply is saying it. But I'm not going to give you the point for infer, because you said infer is not saying it, which isn't quite right. And Kirsten, yeah, you just didn't get either one.
Okay, fair enough.
Nope.
So let's get a score.
I'm with you on that.
Let's get a score summary after our first round.
After the first round, Kirsten Vangsness has 2 points and Jason Kravitz has 1 point.
Those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead when we come back on Go Fact Yourself.
Dominated by Dude Bro Movie Podcasts. A world where Casey Affleck has an Oscar and Angela Bassett does not. Only one podcast is brave enough to call bullshit. Who Shot Ya? With Ricky Carmona.
A lot of people don't know Porgs, Puerto Rican.
Alonzo Duralde.
I would eat Oakjaw.
April Wolf.
I want to interrupt and say yes. That the fish man was real sexy.
Drea Clark.
I have a real soft spot for King Kong.
And women of color.
I was like, damn! Brian
Coogler got final cut.
Coogler got final cut?
I just felt like the film was so sour and so completely irrelevant to basically anything in life.
Who Shot Ya? Listen every Friday on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Kirsten Vangsness with 2 points and Jason Kravitz with 1 point. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen Hong. Thank you, everybody. Now, Kirsten, of your many interests, you told us that you know a lot about Duran Duran,
woo-hoo,
female sexual anatomy,
woo-hoo,
and vegetarian food.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I thought it was a do-it-yourself show, and you would.
For
would
which
be able
topic?
To all of them.
Okay. Today we want to talk to you about Duran Duran. Sorry, Jason.
I'm so scared and excited.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, let's talk about Duran Duran. What does your Duran Duran fandom look like? When did it start? What do you love about
the
boys? Oh, my
God. So I was in fourth grade, and my mom, we had a French student come and stay at our house, and her name was Veronique. We had another one the next year named Laurette. Both of them equally brilliant, equally hot, and we lived in Porterville in the Central Valley, and I feel for these girls now because they were like, I get to go to California. But really, they're going to the place that now, you guys, is rep by Nunez. Just saying. So it's in the middle of the Central Valley. It's like you're trying to go to San Francisco, and then your car gets possessed, and you don't go there. And I love Porterville, and I'm from there. I was raised there, and I love it. But there was nothing to do except 4-H and tennis sometimes at the community college across the freeway where we lived, if it wasn't 103, and washing dishes. That's all that there was to do. And we had this French student, and she gave me, when I was in fourth grade, a 45 of a Duran Duran song.
A 45?
Yeah, and I didn't...
Do you want to explain to Helen what that is?
What's a 45?
I'm not. You just have to figure it out and use your imagination. Yeah. And everybody on the podcast does too. But let me tell you, it's the sexiest thing you've ever seen. It's a small disc that music comes out of.
Ooh.
That when you hit it against the light, does not make a rainbow. So I want to point out the fact that I heard it and loved it and felt like I was listening to something that was going to help me escape from where I was, something lush and beautiful and amazing. And I didn't even know what they looked like until like a year and a half later.
Because
again, Porterville time is about 6 months delayed from everything else in the world. So you didn't get the radio, you didn't get anything after. And my grandma lived in Pasadena. So I happened to be in Pasadena one day, and then I saw them. And then I had a whole other experience of like, I got to viscerally understand what androgyny meant to me.
This is the female
is
sexual anatomy portion.
Feeling,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm bisexual, but I'm not an expert in that, so that's why I didn't say that. So I've loved them for a really long time. And wow. I look at expert as like what you love and what you could like just sit and talk about. And I would just sit and listen to somebody else talk. So I'm as excited to be wrong as I am to be right.
Oh, well, that's a very good attitude. Did you have any favorite songs or did you ever get to see them in concert?
Oh, yeah, so many times. Oh, my God. No, one time. No, true story. I know a girl who her name is Mindy Abar, and she is a saxophonist. And she has actually played with them. I am friends. I am friends with Neil Gaiman, who I love very much. Like,
wait,
a different,
what?
Right? He is the most lovely human being. By weird turn of events, we are really close friends. And I had to tell him the first time, like, we went out to dinner and we realized, like, oh my God, we love each other and we are really good friends. He said, what's the first book you had of mine? And I said, it's the autobiography of Duran Duran, but not because you wrote it, but because I bought it at the record store. I have two copies of it. It is so hard to get because it's rare because Neil Gaiman wrote it. But I don't have it because he wrote it, because I didn't even know who he was when I bought it.
Wait, I just want to backpedal.
I just
want to back up to you casually mentioning that you're besties with Neil Gaiman.
I know.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about that for the next 20 minutes?
He's like part of my little tribe of family members.
I feel like I just lost this game. I feel like I'm
no,
like...
No, you didn't.
It's over.
No.
Well, Kirsten, I'm sorry we couldn't find a topic for you that you get excited about. But,
I can't get so excited.
just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in Duran Duran to test your mastery in the subject.
I'm so excited.
With our expert level questions worth up to 3 points. But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 trivia questions about Duran Duran, each worth 1 point, that apparently you don't care about getting correct. Nevertheless, if you want it, you are allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions.
Okay.
Now, Jason, do listen closely, because if Kirsten answers incorrectly and you know the correct answer, you can steal and make Kirsten feel very, very disappointed.
Yeah, it's okay.
Jason, by the way, how much do you know about Duran Duran?
Are we talking about international geography yet? Because we, I mean, that was kind of, I'm so psyched. Neil Gaiman and I talk about international geography all the time. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So
often.
Here is question number 1. Kirsten, the band was named after a villain in what Jane Fonda film?
Barbarella.
Ellen?
That is correct.
Named after the character Dr. Duran Duran.
Yes, yes, yes. And he actually shows up in Sing Blue Silver, their documentary. The actor who played him actually plays himself, Duran Duran, in the documentary. It's true.
You know, it's funny. They say beer is a sedative, and yet here we are.
It is a sedative.
All right,
I feel like I'd be much more excited.
I feel
excited.
Like I'm
usually would be
be
more
a Duran Duran fan this after is... I leave, after this
oh
segment
God.
Ends. I'm
going to
be like, I love Duran Duran.
They're one
go.
Of the greatest bands in the history of the universe.
All right, but can you tell us, for question number 2, in what English town was the band first formed?
Oh, Birmingham.
Ellen?
Correct.
That is correct as well, Birmingham.
I just want to, can I just, for international geography's sake, say Birmingham?
You can
throw that
could.
Into the mix.
Yes, Neil just texted you and told you that.
All right. You saw it come up, yes.
Jason, you may have run into a freight train here tonight, but we will get a topic to you soon, I promise.
Okay.
Kirsten, number 3. In the music video to View to a Kill, how does the lead singer introduce himself?
Oh, God. He's looking through a he's looking through a telescopy thing. I think that Simon Le Bon is doing. He's wearing a black beret and he's looking through a telescopy thing. I think.
And how does he introduce himself to another person in the video? Again, you do
have
a hint available.
Oh, Le Bon, Simon Le Bon.
Helen.
That is correct.
That is correct. Fun fact. And then he blows up the Eiffel Tower.
It's true.
Yep. Because back then, that wasn't a disturbing possibility.
That was for View to a Kill, and the Grace Jones is in that.
That's right.
Wow.
By the way, that's
right.
The only James Bond theme to chart at number 1 in the U.S.
Thank you. It's an amazing song. I tried to lip sync it in 7th grade for my drama class, but she wouldn't let us.
I hate her. Here we go. Number 4. You're on a roll. The band's most commercially successful album in the U.S. peaked at number 4 on the Billboard 200 chart. Which album is it?
I think it was the Wedding Album.
Helen?
That is not correct.
No, I'm sorry.
Then it was. Then it was.
I'm sorry. It's Jason's opportunity to steal.
Oh,
Jason.
I'd like to say Botswana, Jakey.
I know what it is.
Helen, was it Botswana?
It was not Botswana.
Kirsten, would you like a second chance?
It was Rio?
It was not Rio. No, in fact, it was Arena. It was Arena.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Well, that's why we try to find difficult things for you. This is number five. This is supposed to be the most difficult question. I have a pretty good feeling you might get this, though. Number five. What fantasy writer wrote a biography about Duran Duran?
Spoiler alert.
Titled Duran Duran, The First 4 Years of the Fab Five, which he later called, quote, the worst thing he'd ever written.
Okay, hold on,
and I'll remind
you
do have a hint available.
I've got it. Hold on.
I think I know this one.
Science fiction? Is that what you said, science fiction?
I said what fantasy writer.
Okay. Tolkien.
What? Come on.
C.S. Lewis?
We do need an actual answer.
You could call him.
And again,
I was trying to.
It's all right. I don't need your pity.
All right.
Come
it wasn't pity. It's just
oh,
I like ties. Neil Gaiman.
Ellen?
Yes,
it is Neil Gaiman.
Course.
Amazing.
Of course.
You guys are serious. They gave me like dirty looks.
I want to point out that Kirsten, completely on her own, without even mentioning Duran Duran backstage, brought up that fact. So we knew that she was going to get at least one. Very well done, Kirsten. All right, Kirsten, you've done very well, but now here is your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It's time for your cluster facts.
Oh, God.
Now, this question is so high-level, we'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. You may know this right away. You may need to think on it. The correct answer is worth up to 3 points. Audience, please shut up. Here we go. In 1985, members of the band focused on side projects. John and Andy Taylor formed one band, and Simon Le Bon and Nick Rhodes formed another. For up to 3 points, what were the names of those two bands, and what was the biggest hit single to come from either of them?
Okay, I believe it was Power Station was John Taylor, Andy Taylor, and that was with Robert Palmer and Nile Rodgers, I believe, who is amazing. He did a bunch of things. He's amazing in his own right. Then there was Arcadia, which was my favorite, not most people's. That was Nick Rhodes, Simon Le Bon, a little bit of John Taylor, Sting, and Grace Jones do little side things in it. And there was that movie Legend with Tom Cruise. One of the songs from that is in that. And I think that the song that was the big deal was Get It On, Bang A Gong, which was a cover of a T-Rex song. I think I could be wrong.
Well, we have Kirsten's answers. We have an expert on hand
What was the last thing you said? Bang A Gong?
Get It On, Bang A Gong. Get It On, parentheses, Bang A Gong.
All right. We have Kirsten's answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Someone who, believe it or not, knows more about Duran Duran than Kirsten. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Here with us tonight, we have the music editor at Yahoo and author of Careless Memories of Strange Behavior, My Notorious Life as a Duran Duran Fan. It's Lindsay Parker!
Lindsay Parker!
Oh, my God! Ooh!
Lindsay is modeling both her Nagel jacket and her Duran Duran concert
She's
t-shirt.
She's just covered in Duran Duran.
I have your book, too.
Oh, very good.
Of course you do.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Now, Lindsay,
I feel like we need to be friends. We need to go get a beer after this or something.
Done.
All right. I think it's going to happen. So what do you do as music editor for Yahoo?
I'm a music editor at Yahoo, which means I have actually interviewed Duran Duran a few times. I know. That's how I reacted when I found out I got to do it. I've actually remained relatively calm. I hope they haven't actually read the book that I did, because the book was actually, it was part of Rhino's series of music journalists talking about sort of the bands that set them on that path and how they were super dorks for those bands. So it's basically me talking about how I used to send John Taylor, like, Polaroid photos of myself when I was 12. Like, he was really going to be like, yeah, this is great.
And they didn't recognize you when you interviewed them later? That's probably for the best.
Or I remember a time I read in, like, Tiger Beat that John Taylor's favorite breakfast was green marmalade on toast, so I sent him, like, care packages of green marmalade. Yeah, fun
that
fact.
That is the sweetest stalker move I've ever heard of.
So, and that was my first concert, and the whole book is sort of just about that coming-of-age story. So hopefully they didn't read that, because it's
a little stocky.
Now, have you had a chance to actually be a critic of them in your role, or is it just as an interviewer? Like, can you objectively say whether something is good or bad if you love them so much?
Well, obviously, I'm a bit of a Duran Duran apologist, and even some of the records that a lot of fans didn't like. Like, I would be curious to know what you thought of Red Carpet Massacre, because I actually like that. I will say, though, that the album Thank You, I can't really get behind.
Yeah, Kirsten, rebuttal?
Even,
cannot get
There's
behind.
A couple of songs that I think were good, interesting choices.
Very well, diplomatic.
It was their covers album, and they actually had, like, their taste in music was good. Like, they picked really cool songs, but they just didn't work. Yeah. And I was so rooting for them because, actually, this is kind of crazy. Their comeback record, so the record that came out when people were sort of like, Duran Duran are over, and then they came back, and it was the Wedding album in 1993, and they had two top five hits. That came out last weekend, February 11th, was the 25th anniversary of that album.
Wow.
But everyone was kind of rooting for them, and I was hoping it wouldn't be a fluke, and then they put out Thank You, and I was like, no, what are you doing, Duran Duran? No.
Have you seen them recently? Are they still sexy?
They're
yes.
What she said. Yes, they're aging very, very well. Ooh. Actually, Simon Le Bon, it was just announced, is going to be a grandfather.
Wow.
He's a gilf. He's a gilf.
Tajikistan, Jay Keith.
I just wanna... Thank you, Jason.
Tajikistan.
Thank you, Jason. All right, now let's get to the reason that we brought you here tonight as far as our game goes. Let's remind everyone of the question that we asked Kirsten. We asked her to name the two side projects that were formed by band members in 1985 and the biggest hit to come out of either of them. Helen, let's remind everyone of one of the bands that Kirsten said was formed then.
Kirsten said the Power Station.
That is correct.
That is correct.
But it wasn't Nile Rodgers. It was Tony Thompson from Chic.
Oh, my God.
And Bernard Edwards from Chic also produced. Nile Rodgers has done
Nile
a lot of
Rodgers
stuff with them, though.
He's done a lot of stuff.
He has.
Yeah. That's true.
In her defense, he's done a lot.
So we should not shave any points off of
you
that.
You got to give her points for that.
She was just adding some fun facts. So, no points shaved at all.
All right.
Power
and
Station
Helen,
is correct.
Helen, what did Kirsten say was the other side project formed by members of the band?
Kirsten said Arcadia.
Lindsay?
That is correct. And I would love to have an offline conversation with you about Power Station versus Arcadia, because people do tend to take sides. I like them both, but I'm kind of team Arcadia.
Me too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. They're going to be besties. All right. And finally, Helen, we asked Kirsten the biggest hit single to come from either band. What did she say?
Kirsten said, Get It On, Bang a Gong.
The T-Rex cover. That is wrong. It did do well.
Oh.
It charted at number 9, but Some Like It Hot actually charted.
Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Some
it
like
charted.
It hot.
And you know, what's interesting is actually Election Day charted at number 6, and so did Some Like It Hot, but Some Like It Hot was on the chart longer, so that technically is the most successful.
All right, but still a very good job by Kirsten on that round. Now, Kirsten... Anything you would like to ask of our expert, Lindsay Parker, while she's here?
No, I'm overwhelmed.
Okay, fair enough.
I am legitimately, I'm gobsmacked by, like, how much time we've spent on clearly one of my favorite subjects.
I would like to say, was that the best use of my time? But it set me on my path to being a music journalist, so I will say yes.
Very
Thank
good.
You,
and if people
Durand.
Want to see your work, Lindsay, where can they find you?
They can go to yahoo.com/music.
Lindsay Parker, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
All right, let's get a score recap from Helen Hong.
After that round, Kirsten Vangsness has 8 points, and Jason Kravitz has 1 point with a round of questions coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Jason about a topic he knows about. Plus, later, Kirsten and Jason will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my friend's favor.
Judge John Hodgman ruled in my favor.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. You're hearing the voices of real litigants, real people who have submitted disputes to my internet court at the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I hear their cases, I ask them questions, they're good ones, and then I tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Thanks to Judge John Hodgman's ruling, my dad has been forced to retire one of the worst dad jokes of all time.
Instead of cutting his own hair with a Flowbee, my husband has his hair cut professionally.
I have to join a community theater group.
And my wife has stopped bringing home wild animals.
It's the Judge John Hodgman podcast. Find it every Wednesday at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Thanks, Judge John Hodgman.
Yourself, where our score is Kirsten Vangsness with 8 points and Jason Kravitz with 1 point. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. Thanks, everybody. Jason Kravitz, of your many, many interests, you told us that you know a lot about intercontinental geography, crossword puzzles, and Young Frankenstein. Today we're going to ask you about Young Frankenstein.
Yay!
But if you would like to mention another city, please feel free.
I'd like to say Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Very well done. Let's talk about Young Frankenstein. What do you love about it? When did you first encounter it?
Gosh,
why are you an expert?
I think I've always been a fan of parodies, you know, and I think growing up, I grew up with Weird Al Yankovic and stuff like that. Even before that, it was Mice on the Folk Singer and all these, you know, vaudeville acts and things like that. So parody was always in my bones. And I think when Airplane came out, that was kind of like the moment for me. I was like, this is the best stuff ever. I want more stuff like this. I'd already been aware of Mel Brooks' movies. Obviously, those movies, that movie Young Frankenstein predated Airplane, but I just wasn't aware of it yet. And then one day I caught that movie, and everything about it, every moment of that movie just screamed, this is the perfect movie. And now when people ask me for my top movies, that's number one. It's number one, followed by Airplane and probably another one like Spinal Tap or one of those that's another great parody.
Consistent. Very good. When did you last see the movie?
Probably about 6 months ago was I probably last saw the whole movie.
Wow.
Yeah, I watch it regularly. I had to show my kid, you know?
Yeah. And your kid is 16, is that
right?
He's
16.
And did he appreciate the humor as well?
No, not really.
No. There's time.
What can you expect?
Was he like, Dad? What is this, Dad?
What is this? I don't get it. What do you mean, walk this way?
Why
walk
isn't
this
it...
way? What does that mean?
Well, I was going to ask also, is there a favorite scene or joke that you have from the film? There's so many.
Sedative. No, I mean, there's so many, and there's so many iconic. I mean, I would venture a guess that most people in this room were born after that movie was released. But it was, there are so many iconic moments, iconic lines from that movie.
Yeah, you don't even necessarily realize it's from the movie until you see it again.
Yeah, exactly.
And now, you were on Broadway when the musical version of it came out.
I was, indeed.
Did you get a chance to see that?
Of course, yeah,
and
of course.
What did you think about the musical interpretation?
I thought it was pretty good, actually. I thought they did a pretty good job using a lot of the a lot of the same tropes, but they added songs where you never would have imagined, and they made complete sense once you heard them. When Igor and Dr. Frankenstein first meet, and they sang together again for the first time, it was kind of genius.
Could you imagine yourself in one of those roles?
I actually auditioned to play Igor at one point after the musical had opened.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah. So you could imagine, but they...
I can imagine they didn't imagine it as much as I did.
All right, now just ahead, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in Young Frankenstein to test your mastery in the subject with an expert-level question, but before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are five trivia questions about the topic, each worth 1 point. As a reminder, you are allowed up to 2 hints for these 5 questions.
Oh, boy.
Now, Kirsten, you can steal if Jason gets any of them wrong and you know them. By the way, how much do you know about Young Frankenstein?
I like it very much. I actually made a movie called Kill Me Deadly that I always describe as a cross between the Maltese Falcon and Young Frankenstein had a baby. I have to send it to you, Jason.
You do?
Wow.
All right, Jason. You're
not
going
to like it as much as that movie.
No, but you like it much. You like Young Frankenstein more than I knew about Duran Duran, so this is going to be fascinating.
You're going to have to run a tight ship, Jason. All right, here we go. Here's your first question about Young Frankenstein. To what Irving Berlin song does Frankenstein's monster perform?
That would be Putting on the Ritz.
Ellen?
That is correct.
Putting on the Ritz! Fun fact, that song was covered by Taco in 1982, and you can hear more about that in our episode 1 of Go Fact Yourself, where we discuss
that. Remember that, guys?
Let's go back and listen.
Here we go. You're 1 for 1. Here is question number 2. Not known for comedies, what Academy Award-winning actor played the blind priest who struggles to serve hot soup?
Oh, that would be Gene Hackman.
Ellen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Yes. I was just about to make espresso.
That's right. He had won for French Connection, later won for Unforgiven. Here is question number 3. Victor Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein's grandfather, is revealed to be whose boyfriend?
Oh, that would be Frau Blücher.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Helen, is that correct?
That is correct.
And Helen, once again, what was that name?
Frau Blücher.
That's right. We bought a sound cue.
With sound effects.
Feel free to mention her throughout the show, and we'll keep our sound engineer David on tap. Here we go. Number 4. When the monster and Elizabeth, played by Madeline Kahn, are in the bedroom, Elizabeth says there are 2 hampers in the bathroom. One is just for shirts. What 2 items is the other one for?
I believe the answer to that is socks and poopy underwears.
Helen?
That is correct.
Oh. Now, Helen, it actually is poo-poo underwear.
Poo-poo
but are we give it to him?
I'm going to give it to him.
We're going to give it to
him.
We're going to give you the poopy and the poo-poo.
It's technically poo-poo underwear, but you know.
Yes,
poopy,
we don't want to get
poo-poo.
Tweets about poo-poo underwear, so we want to make sure that's correct. Jason, you're 4 for 4. Let's see if you can do a clean sweep.
Oh, let's see.
And again, you do still have a hint available.
Oh, boy.
Here is question number 5. Neil Gaiman. No, I'm just kidding. Number 5, the brain Igor is sent to steal is labeled with the name of a, quote, scientist and saint, a name that belongs to a real historian and professor. What was that name?
He's sent for the name, but he writes it with an initial on his hand. It's Hans Delbruck, and he puts H. Delbruck on his hand.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct.
Wow. Thank you. That's epic.
Jason, you are 5 for 5. You have a chance to become only the second contestant we've had to get a clean sweep if you can get this next question right. Because here's your expert-level question that requires multiple answers. It's
all
time
right.
for your cluster fact.
Ding, ding.
That is the correct response. All right, we're bringing on an expert to assess your response. It's worth up to 3 points. Here we go. The first speaking part of Young Frankenstein is, of course, Gene Wilder as Dr. Frankenstein. The second person to speak is a medical student who asks a question of the doctor. The actor who played that medical student went on to have a successful career in Hollywood as both a casting director and a voice actor, providing the voice of one of the Smurfs for several years. For up to 3 points, who was that actor? What was his character name in the credits of Young Frankenstein? And which Smurf did he voice?
Wow, my brain hurts.
Jason?
It was Danny Goldman was the actor. Mm-hmm. I believe he was listed as medical student. Mm-hmm. And I believe he was there a character, Brainy Smurf? Yeah, I'm going to go with Brainy Smurf. I don't know.
All right, we've got Danny Goldman, medical student, and Brainy Smurf. Helen, keep track of those answers because we have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Here with us tonight is a man who's had a career as a voice actor and casting director and who appeared as the medical student in Young Frankenstein. It's Danny Goldman!
Danny Goldman, ladies and gentlemen!
Wow!
You're finally beating me. I'm finally beating you.
All right, Danny, let's have a seat and let's get my nut to that microphone. Welcome, Mr. Goldman.
Welcome, Danny.
Hi,
Goldman.
How are you?
Danny, all right. He just said, I'm finally meeting you. I'm like, you could have called.
Now, you actually know Kirsten from your casting
yes.
director days. Tell us about that.
She used to come in and audition for us before she got famous.
Wow.
I would be happy to come in and audition for anybody now that I am famous.
We were doing commercial work.
And in fact, you cast me in a couple things
yes,
as well.
Absolutely.
So that's how you get on the show, everybody. Cast me in something, and you get to be our expert.
You've never cast me, and I'm a little mad about it.
You've been retired for a while, isn't that right?
The funny thing is, I myself have only seen Young Frankenstein 3 times. Last night was the 3rd time.
What?
The first,
what?
The first when it came out, and the second, there was a 30-year Mel Brooks thing that they did at the Egyptian, and I went to see it. I could never, ever watch myself.
How come?
It's just one of those things. Some actors have this madness.
Wow.
I have it. It's not a good thing to have. So I either have to get drunk to see myself.
Wow.
Really, and I don't drink. Or
that makes it difficult, yes. Yeah.
I would say that 90% of the stuff I've ever done, I've never seen.
Wow. Well, what was it like to be in Young Frankenstein and work with Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks and all those people?
The couple of things I do remember. I remember auditioning at Fox, and Terry Garr was there. Either I had known her before, or I had met her just once before, and I wouldn't be in love with Terry Garr. And then I walked in the room, and there's both Mel and Gene Wilder. And I thought, oh my God, this is really scary. And I did my part, and about 2 weeks later, I got a phone call saying that I was cast.
Wow. And what was it like actually filming it? I understand that in real life, it was in color.
No, that's incorrect, J.K.
No?
I thought it was a black and white.
No, as a matter of fact, they wanted to, 20th Century Fox wanted to shoot it in color just because they wanted it, Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder wanted it in black and white. They wanted to shoot it in color because Peru had just gotten color projectors. Mm. And Mel Brooks said, nuh-uh, because if you shoot it in color, you're going to make some excuse and you're going to risk a lawsuit and you're going to play it in color, and I'm not going to have that. We have to shoot it on black and white film, which is what they did.
Wow, how about that?
Point Kravitz.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, definitely.
No, no
definitely.
Point. Oh, well.
And you mentioned Peru, which is, I believe, a place.
Peru. Thank you very much.
And did it lead to other work for you? I know you worked in a lot of things, but did that role
specifically? I was on a series about a year later or 2 years later. I got a series, I think, possibly from that, or that people knew me from that.
Yeah. And then when did you segue into doing voice work?
That was, I just auditioned a lot and could never get a radio spot. And then they kept calling me to audition for the Smurfs, which I did, and how you identified.
Wait, let's not reveal that just yet. We don't know yet if Jason's correct.
You don't know nothing, I know nothing.
Okay. Actually, well, let's get to the reason that we brought you here tonight as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked Jason. We wanted to know who played the medical student, how the medical student was credited, and which Smurf that actor voiced. Helen, let's remind everyone, who did Jason say played the medical student?
Jason said Danny Goldman.
Danny Goldman, is that correct?
Yes.
It was correct.
Thank God I got that one right.
And Helen, how did Jason say the role was credited in the film?
Jason said medical student.
Danny?
Yeah, perfect.
That's correct as well. And finally, we asked him, which Smurf did you voice on the Smurfs? Helen, what did Jason say?
Jason said Brainy Smurf.
Danny, who did you voice on the Smurfs?
Brainy, 9 years.
Brainy Smurfs, he got it right.
Sweep.
A perfect
clean
score
sweep
from Jason. Can you give us a little Brainy?
I can't.
All right, thank you very much. Not for free. No,
I need a voice lift. My voice is sunk.
Oh, okay. It was a high voice that you did. But you did that for how long?
9 years.
Nine years, ladies and gentlemen, is Brainy Smurf.
What a gig.
That's amazing. Thanks again for joining us, Danny Goldman. All right, Helen, let's get a score recap as we go into our final round.
Jason had an amazing round, getting 8 points in that round, giving him 9 points total. Kirsten Vangsness has 8 points.
That's right. This is still anybody's game with our final Fast Facts round coming up. We'll crown our winner when we come back on Go Fact Yourself.
I like to Hulu and chill. Am I a monster?
What's happening on Game of Thrones?
What's a technical Emmy?
Why did Dominic Toretto go rogue?
Is this meme already dead?
Nicki Minaj or Remy Ma?
For answers to these questions and so much more, come on over to Pop Rocket, a pop culture roundtable discussion that always has a fun, diverse panel talking about the stuff we love. Catch us every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you decide to get your podcasts. I'm not going to judge.
Go Fact Yourself, where our score is Kirsten Vangsness with 8 points and Jason Kravitz with 9 points. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks, everybody. It is going to come down to this. Our final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements, and each contestant will answer with either true or false. I'll start with Kirsten and alternate between each guest. We'll keep the discussion to a minimum. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. This will decide the game.
Ooh.
Right?
Cool. Edge of our seats.
All right, here we go. Kirsten, New York City is the most populous city in the United States.
True.
Correct.
Jason, the main ingredient in bok choy is corn.
False.
Correct.
That's right, it's cabbage. Kirsten, Right Said Fred has a writing credit on Taylor Swift's song, Look What You Made Me Do.
True.
Correct.
Jason, according to Forbes, 3 of the 5 highest paid athletes of all time are golfers.
True.
Correct.
That's right. Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer, and Jack Nicklaus. Kirsten, Christina Applegate is from Norway.
False.
Correct.
That's right. She's from Hollywood. Jason, Stellan Skarsgård is from Norway.
True.
Incorrect.
No, he's from Sweden. Kirsten, the NFL's Tennessee Titans play in Memphis.
True.
Incorrect.
No, they play in Nashville. Jason, there's a type of shark called a pajama shark.
True.
Correct.
And I saw them when I was in Africa. But we don't have to talk about that now. That's fine. Kirsten, there is a type of shark called a nervous shark.
False.
Incorrect.
No, that is true. Jason, there is a type of shark called a Phillips head shark.
False.
Correct.
There is a hammerhead shark and a Phillips head screwdriver, but not a Phillips head shark. All right, let's give a nice hand to both of our contestants while Helen Hong adds up the score. What a round, what a game, Jason Kravitz and Kirsten Vangsness. Helen, are you ready to crown a winner on today's episode of Go Fact Yourself?
All right, at the end of the game, Kirsten Vangsness has 11 points and Jason Kravitz has 13 points.
A come from behind victory for Jason Kravitz. Jason, you are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. What will you do with your championship?
Set a give! That's all I have
That's
to say.
That's what he'll do. Fair enough. All right, we want to give everyone an opportunity to promote any upcoming products, appearances, or services. Jason, what do you have going on?
If I haven't already said it, upcoming in New York City on March 17th, I'm doing my show. It's called Off the Top. It's at the Duplex. You can find it at offthetop.nyc. You can also go there if you go back in time to the February 25th show in L.A. And so on and so on.
Jason Kravitz, ladies and gentlemen. My friend, Kirsten Vangsness.
Let's see. I'm on a television show that gets plenty of promoting. I also do a lot of theater at Theater of Note. You can find them at theaterofnote.com. The Blinking Owl Distiller. You can sometimes find me there washing dishes and bussing tables. And there's a movie called Kill Me Deadly on iTunes that I executive produced and starred in.
And I hear it's not as good. Young Frankenstein.
It's not as good as Young Frankenstein.
Fair enough. The very modest and very busy Kirsten Vangsness. Your co-host is Miss Helen Hong.
Yay!
How lucky are you?
I will be performing at the Improv River Center in San Antonio, Texas, March 22nd to 25th. You can also find my performance calendar at helenhong.com.
Helen Hong, ladies and gentlemen. And me, I'm on Twitter at j_Keith, on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. And if you want to read about my trip to Africa, no big deal, whatever, I'll be posting on thepointsguy.com, and I've also got pieces in the Los Angeles Times. That just leaves me to thank Kirsten Vangsness, Jason Kravitz, Lindsay Parker, Danny Goldman, Helen Hong. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactYourPod. And rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live. It's free. Go to GoFactYourPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts like KerDog8 did. He, she, or they said, we're a well-produced show with interesting guests and hosts. Thanks, KerDog8.
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from Angel City Brewery in downtown Los Angeles. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Go Fact Yourself's theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. The show is edited by Christian Duenas. David McKeever is our live sound engineer. Special thanks to Katie Krasner, Amy Kramer, Marcia Neumeier, Mike Avianos, Spencer Marks, Stella Chow, Daniela Zeltzer, and MC Velada. I've been Helen Hong.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.